Hello and welcome everyone. My name is Arzuma Seni and it's a great pleasure welcoming to the New York Public Library tonight's distinguished guests, the award-winning authors Mary Virginia Swanson and Darius Himes, who have kindly returned to share their insights on the evolving world of photo book publishing. Their highly regarded volume, Publish Your Photography Book, takes aspiring individuals through the entire publishing process, from refining their concept to marketing their book. This new revised edition provides current information on digital printing, electronic publishing, making an app for your book project, the role of social media in promoting your book, and much more. Also, the growing market on unique and limited edition books comprised of traditional and or customized elements is discussed, with useful worksheets and expanded lists of distributors. Juried competitions and book art fairs are among the resources included in the appendices. I'd like to thank our guests who are seated on the side for appearing in an Artist Career Development Series event addressing the growing needs and concerns of the independent creative workforce in this city. Many of you have already purchased copies of the book. I see that there are only four left. So whichever gets to the book sale table at the end of the audience Q&A will have those books. And one last thing, we have a great audience here tonight, and I'd like to invite all of you to visit the art collection at Mid-Manhattan Library, located at 455 Fifth Avenue, where you can freely and openly browse one of the largest and most comprehensive circulating collections of books and videos covering every aspect of photography and publishing. Thank you so much for attending this event. And now it's time to turn the floor to our star guests. Woohoo!
I think you memorized that. That was so great.
Thank you so much, Arzu. It's wonderful to be back here. Thank you all for coming tonight.
Thank you.
This beautiful spring night, you've chosen to come in and be with us, which is fantastic.
So we were here in, we gave a lecture for the first edition of the book in December of 2010, I think. Was anybody at that? Anybody that's here? A few. You guys get
trusted
A's.
Trusted friends that
Thank
traveled
you.
Out again.
Thank and how you. Many of you, do any of you own copies of the first edition? Right on. How many of you have read it that own the? thank you for that. So surprisingly, the book has sold out, and here we are for the second edition. And you all proved that it wasn't just my mother that bought copies.
That's right.
And
the industry's changed. That's the most important thing. When we had our column several years ago, started actually in 2003, Darius and I had a column in a magazine that he edited for PhotoEye, and the column ran for 3 years on how to publish your photo book. When we finished that series was when PhotoEye took the magazine to online only. Darius went on to found Radius Books and do other projects. We knew we'd bring it to book form at some point. And the turning point for this series turning into what was the first edition were two main things in our field. One was the collectible photo book market was truly on the rise. And the second thing at that time was the very beginning of self-publishing. Barely beginning. Now with the second edition, after selling out the first, of course our focus in the new content ranges from ebooks to, as Arzu said, into apps and other ways to bring the work. Social media has a stronger presence in our guidebook and all. So that's where the book really is today.
The genesis of the, we'll start with the genesis of the column actually was we continued to have we started the column based on an outline that we drew up in 2003.
Right.
I was the editor of this small quarterly journal about photography books, and we constantly had photographers coming to us asking, how do I approach a publisher, and where do I go to get advice about publishing? And so the column was really based on us reaching out to industry professionals, editors, publishers, designers, and walking, the column really walked people through how publishing works. Mm-hmm. So it all sort of starts with this phrase that we kept hearing from photographers over and over: I want a book of my photographs. And
now.
So, yeah, and so how we really wanted to try to answer that. And the book, just to give you a brief summary for those of you who aren't familiar with it, the book really is based on just breaking down the publishing process into these digestible chunks. Mm-hmm. So the nuts and bolts of publishing, that section really takes you through what happens behind the doors of a publishing house. How, who are the players, who are the different figures, the people that you're going to encounter.
Mm-hmm. Acquisitions, editors and such. How to think about which brand is right for you, which publisher.
That section is very much, there's a lot, the majority of the content of the book is really principles of publishing. It's not, that are really unchanging. So even though there is a lot that has changed in relation to the photography book market and social media and the way we promote things, there are a lot of principles to publishing that haven't changed at all. So that section really deals with how do publishing houses work. Beyond that, then we go into the making of your book. So we talk with editors, we talk with designers, we talk with people who oversee production, and really kind of lay out how do illustrated books get made.
Mm-hmm. Then it goes into the marketing of your book, and it, again, whether you're the publisher or, in fact, you work with a publishing house, the same principles will apply. You're going to need to market your book, the value of an exhibition with your book, if you've raised the level of your brand to that point where you have a following or not. Then we go into the book selling and distribution, again, from the standpoint that it may be you as the publisher, or you may be working as a partner, a helper, an assistant, really, to your own publishing house's distribution market, into case studies, which was a valuable tool for us in the column as well,
and
walk you through great examples of books that you'll know, artists that you'll know, and how they handled their publication process.
And the case studies are, each one was really chosen because there was a different process or a different type of book that came out of that artist's practice, and so we wanted to showcase different types of books.
So, for example, the second edition features an additional case study with Mischa Henner.
Mischa Henner, who's a photographer whose practice uses print-on-demand, which was something that we couldn't address in really very well in the first issue of the first edition of the book. And then there's a whole section, as Arezu mentioned, there's a whole section of resources where we survey existing publishers, existing distributors. There are worksheets, various timelines and things to follow. So we want the book to be, the book is really written for photographers who are looking at trying to publish. So taking this phrase, the first part of our lecture is really about asking photographers to just stop for a minute and really thoughtfully consider this statement about wanting a book of photographs. So there's three essential elements. There is the photographer, there's you, there is the idea of the book, and then there are the photographs. So this first element, just you as a photographer, it's really about taking stock of who you are, where you are in your career, and what you want this book to do. That is something that you have to be realistic about with yourself. You have to really, I mean, it's a great exercise to just sit and say, okay, what specifically do I want to have happen? What are achievable goals? How is this book going to actually support my career as an artist? Mm-hmm. All of that.
I think the greatest challenge you can ask yourself in that process is, what is the role of this book at this moment in my career? And for some of you, it may be a small one-signature volume that's a promotional tool. For others of you, it might be a 32-page exhibition catalog. But it doesn't have to begin with the epic monograph. A book can really serve a purpose for you at various stages in your career.
So the next really sort of central idea of our book is the idea of a book. And for all of us, books are things that we grow up with. Books are things that we ship around the country when we move, and I want you to stick
that
in storage units. So just this idea that, like, if you close your eyes, all of you are going to, when I say the word book, you're all going to have different ideas. For some of you, this may stand out as, like, the book. I know there's a few of you that probably think this is the book, but what most photographers come up with when they think about, for so long, Robert Frank's The Americans has been this classic monograph of photography that has stood the test of time. And this idea of really thinking about what is the type of book that you want and that you can have is something that we encourage photographers to do over and over. So we've included a lot of examples that are scattered throughout Publisher Photography Book. And it's important, we think it's like so educational to just spend time looking at books and things like how is the photographer's name treated on the cover? How is the title treated? Mm-hmm. Is there an image? Is it abstract? You know, all of these issues that are integral to how a book looks and feels and is received in the world. Mm-hmm. And it's also this idea of, like, what kind of image do you use? Which audience are you approaching? These are just a few really different examples.
And, of course, Todd's name is not even on this book. Just like on Alex Soth's Sleeping by the Mississippi, there was no photograph. So you'll all make those decisions.
This is a little example of four books that we just stacked up next to each other because they all are so different, even though they're all illustrated and photography books. The first one on the left, clearly the photographer is not the primary thing that's being announced. It's the idea of the full moon. It's a book about the first time that man landed on the moon, and it's based on a NASA archive. But this idea of what is, again, how does even the spine treatment sort of announce what this book is about? And then you can kind of go through and you see the next book is
Aaron Siskind
at 100. It's very much about Aaron Siskind, and it's not about a subject beyond him as an artist. The others really don't even indicate very much at all about what the book is. And they're very much small sort of artist monographs. But just thinking through and starting to recognize how little things like the spine and how a photographer's name is treated all indicate who you're trying to reach out to in a way.
And the Full Moon book, if I'm not mistaken, isn't it 100,000 copies in print?
Yeah, so Full Moon is one of those books that
amazing.
It doesn't matter who the photographer, you know, or the editor was, it's very much about a subject that everybody loves. Mm-hmm. So the last element, obviously, are the photographs, and that's your responsibility. So we're going to skip over that.
Because all of your work is ready, right?
Exactly. We know that you're all amazing photographers.
Yeah. So.
So just to continue with this idea of, like, what kind of book are you trying to do and who is the audience, there's two crucial components, the concept of the book and the audience. The first component is really about, we speak with a lot of both Swanee and I do consultations and see photographers' portfolios regularly. And for so many artists, it's the central sort of stumbling block is really being able to evaluate and refine what is the idea behind this book. There's any number of reasons as to why that can be confusing or difficult to identify, but that's really the first thing you need to address. And so we're going to talk you through just a couple of examples here of projects that are very different. And the first one is so clear. This is a photographer, Andrew Zuckerman. I don't know how many of you are familiar with his work or have seen some of these books. His first big project in this vein was called Creature, and it was simply about photographs of animals, the whole sort of like biodiversity of the planet. The next book, which also has a very clear subject matter, and you can see this perfectly in how this book is presented. And I've seen this book in airport gift shops and just all over. It is about birds. Andrew Zuckerman is a much smaller element of that, even indicated in how his name is treated on the spine. And the photographs are straightforward. They're very they're beautiful images, but they are very much about a subject matter. It has nothing to do with Andrew so much as a working artist, but it's his vision of these creatures. His newest book is Flower. I mean, just continuing with this theme of subject-driven, extremely accessible projects. The presentation is accessible, beautiful, very straightforward. And you have no doubt what this book is about.
I think this is also an example of a publisher that's really embraced that and continues to grow that brand, with Chronicle being
right.
A publisher of that.
So when it comes to audiences and projects, Swanee and I like to talk about this idea of the different sizes of projects and publishers, as well as audiences. So you've got small, medium, large, extra large audiences. You as a working artist may have a very small audience, but the audience for a book like Bird is extremely large. But the project, you need to kind of think about your project in relation to the audience, and these things may not match up. You may have a very narrow project that will have a much larger audience than you ever expected. So the next example that we're going to use is this book called RFK Funeral Train by Paul Fusco. Paul Fusco was a young working magazine photographer. He was given the assignment to ride the train carrying RFK's body down to Washington, D.C., where it was going to be buried. It was literally an afternoon assignment, an extremely sort of small project in the scope of how much time he was spending with the project, really even small in terms of what he thought he could do with it. There's only so many photographs you can take on a train as it's going over, you know, spending 3 hours. So in the end, what he did is he turned his camera on outside the train and just took photographs of the people that lined the tracks that were sort of like giving their last goodbyes.
So for him, it was a small project. It was an afternoon shoot, but the audience was huge.
Well,
and
so
it's timeless.
And what ended up happening is he took that work, and the magazine assignment was run. None of these photographs were used. This was not the story. It was the activity on the train and all of that. And he stuck all of these Kodachromes in a drawer for like 40 years. And in the end, somebody, in going through his archive, they pulled them out, and that's when it was Umbridge Editions here in New York City who published a very small edition, but it's now gone into its fourth or fifth printing. And so this idea of small projects being lined up with larger audiences, large projects may reach smaller audiences, like just really kind of asking yourself these questions about what is the audience, what is the project, all of that.
That will help you scale the whole project with the right publisher, too.
Exactly. Okay, so an assignment that you can take away from this, I hope all of you have your pens and pencils and paper ready, is to actually take one of your favorite books at home, whether it's Robert Frank's The Americans or anything else, and actually get yourself into the mindset of the vocabulary of books and the vocabulary of publishing. These are all of the things that any editor or publisher in here can tell you exactly. The projects that they're working on now, they can tell you everything, all of these things off the top of their head. How many pages? How many illustrations? What's the trim size? What kind of binding are you talking about? How thick are the boards? What kind of paper do you want as end paper? What kind of paper do you want to print on? Like, all of those are considerations that go into the physicality of the book. It also goes into the considerations of the budget for the book.
So as you fall in love with books, ask yourself why. And note all those things. Begin your short list of the papers that you love, the font style that you want, everything having to do with the making of the book. Then you'll be further along. You'll be better prepared for your discussions.
And even when you know, as somebody who's wanting a book and you say, oh, I think it should be 9 by 12 inches, if that is just an abstract number in your mind and you've actually not held a book that's 9 by 12 inches, you should do that. You should find that. You should really identify, you know, what is the object that you're trying to, that you're aiming for. It's going to help kind of refine that process. Mm-hmm. This is a page in the book that's just a stack of all different types of bindings that we thought was fun.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay, so this central question, why, again, this goes back to to you as the photographer, why do you want to do a book? There's all sorts of reasons. It may be that you have a story to tell, that you may be a documentary photographer working on a long-term project. There may be an idea or a cause to advance that is best told as an illustrated book. As an artist, there may be a body of work that you want to promote. It's not subject-driven. It's you as the artist are the subject. And that right there, that distinction is a big one. If it's a subject that is not you, that's one type of book. And honestly, it's one type of publisher. But if you are the subject, that's going to be a different type of publisher and a different type of book. And just sort of being honest with yourself about that is important. And lastly, this idea of the book as a vehicle that can help advance your career as an artist and as a photographer.
It could be, in fact, marking an exhibition. You may have a real deadline with something like that will force you to make some decisions promptly.
So all of this is kind of building up to this question of, all right, well, which publisher is appropriate for my project? And we, this again, the idea of small, medium, large, extra large publishers, they really all, there's a full range of different types of publishers, some of which are in this room tonight. I mean, there's representatives from large houses, small houses, it's all...
No, we're not going later, to out later. Them yet.
So with larger publishing companies, they will typically bring author services to the table. I mean, what a large house does is there are editors, there are in-house design, there's production management. They handle marketing all the way through distribution.
Our publicist is here, Jamie, who set this up. We're grateful for that. That's the kind of thing that you hope will come with a larger publishing house if you choose to go with a large house.
Smaller houses are often, you know, as many as two, you know, as few as 2 to 4 people. And at that point, you're working with this, you're working with one person or two people who are doing everything. You're talking about the edit, the design, you're going over samples of papers and all of that with one or two people. So it's that's the kind of range that you have when it comes to publishers. And every publisher has a different way of approaching bookmaking, even though in the end the same kind of product is produced, but it's, again, everybody has a different process.
So no matter if you're going to be self-published or if you're going to be published by a big house, there are things that you're going to need to participate in. Everyone will be grateful that you handle some of these things. Supporting your publisher is crucial. And again, as I said in the beginning, even if that publisher is you, yourself, all of these things will be expected.
We did this a few years ago where we pulled out, this is a stack of books by the publisher Trolley. This idea, when I was the editor of the PhotoEye book list, I used to get regularly catalogs from publishers from all around the world. And publishers send out typically 2 catalogs a year. There's a fall season and there's a spring season. And I simply became familiar with books in association with a certain season and from a certain publisher. And you can really learn a lot about the philosophy of a publisher, about their tastes, their sensibilities, even when it comes to the larger houses all the way down to the smaller houses, just by looking at the books they publish. So, for instance, Trolley, you're never going to find a book of nostalgic landscapes on Trolley's list. Everything there has to do with the human condition and social issues around the world, and even just the titles and the colors of the books indicate a lot. It's amazing how much.
So what we're really looking at here is their brand.
Yeah.
So when you start to think about a publisher, analyzing them in this way is crucial. And contrast to that is J&L. Much more upbeat, much more
just
colorful,
yeah, just
playful.
Fun and playful.
Yeah.
They're a small nonprofit art book publishing house. All of the books they do are in, for the most part, small runs. They're books on artists. They're not huge subject-driven titles that are aimed at the largest audiences.
So we just hope that you'll go home and tear your library apart and look at it by brand, because they don't take too lightly to that when you do something like this at a bookstore. Twin Palms is another fantastic publishing house out of Santa Fe. And the scale, right off the bat, you notice is a little bit larger, a little more photograph-driven books.
Exactly. Then just to point out a few resources where you can do this really easily, PhotoEye's website for the longest time now has had something called Publishers Showcase. And this goes on for pages. It scrolls down. Every single thumbnail represents a different publisher. So you click onto any of those thumbnails, and it takes you to a page. So here's Aperture's page. And then it gives you their list. Here are the most recent books by Aperture. And it's a great way to identify, to just get a sense of, like, okay, well, what does Chronicle publish? What does Twin Palms publish? What are they looking at right now? If they're doing a book on anything and you've got a project that's that exact same thing, well, they're probably not going to publish it anytime soon. Any of those books, then you can just kind of click in and learn more about that particular book. So it's a really great resource.
You know, I know you all do that kind of research when you're thinking about a gallery or a museum that you think would be right for your work. So put that same mindset into thinking about publishers in that same way. What's their past list? What's their upcoming list? And do you fall correctly there?
Totally. So submission proposals. How do publishers find out about projects? One of them is that they have submission guidelines on their website. And a lot of the larger publishers, this information is kind of buried, but it's there, and you can read through it. And if you send something in, this, is, for instance, is the Princeton Architectural Press guidelines.
Yeah. And can I just say one thing? Many of the photographers that I know are nearing publication, their work is wrapping up, I encourage them to fill this out. It's my favorite of the submission guidelines. It's the toughest. And whether you're going to be published by Princeton in the end or not, as an exercise, it's fantastic. It helps get you into the mind of the publisher, the kinds of questions that they ask, from what are the competing titles in print. They ask you who the audience is for the book. Do they have trade associations? Can you find them? It'll really help you think the way a publisher thinks.
Right.
And this is, the Radius is the next publisher, which is really the opposite end of the spectrum in many, many ways. And I love their submission guidelines. Instead of an 8-page PDF, it's 3 simple questions. Do we love the work? Is it the right book at the right time for you and for us? Does it fit well into our list and our vision? It's as simple as that for them.
With the smaller houses, it's really... they're often a sort of single person, personality driven company, and they're curating a list that is about their vision as much as it is about the artists that they want to publish. So there's kind of an intimate connection there. You could argue the same thing for the larger houses, but they often cast a wider net. But anyway, this is just to kind of give you an example.
So besides submission guidelines, you might be making a blind submission to them, just up and sending things off, like this sample.
In which case, you'll end up in this pile.
Which was on your desk, wasn't it, at Radius?
This was on my desk for a long time. You don't want to really, you don't want to do a blind submission. Yeah. Everybody can do it, but you talk to publishers and they will all say, there's like a closet, and the interns, they send the interns there to like go through the blind submissions. That's not the way, it's not the way you want to do it.
It's not that it never happens, because there are great stories that we hear about that it happens, but not very often.
The best way is when you have a relationship with somebody, and then the question is, well, how do I meet people? And there's a lot. Our industry, the photography industry, is extremely open. There are a lot of ways. There are portfolio review events. There are a lot of industry events where you have a chance to interact with people.
There's also a lot of book competitions now. And remember that even if you don't win that prize, it may be that the judges have been talking about your work for a week.
Yeah.
So that's another way to get your work in front of the right people.
And editors in every industry are out and about. They're looking at group shows. They're jurying photography events. They are visiting galleries. They are talking to their colleagues. Editors call each other up and say, this project isn't right for us, but I think it's could be something you want to look at. So referrals, you know, this is another way of saying build a network, be a nice person. If you piss off one person somewhere over here, others are going to hear about it.
Yeah.
And then agents and packagers, which is what happens at more of the a higher end in the sense of quantity. If your project is one like an Andrew Zuckerman type of project where there is a potential for a very large audience, you can really benefit from either an agent or a packager who can help advise about how to get it in front of an editor at a larger house and really sort of maximize its potential. And just to give a little bit of a contrast here about when we're talking about quantities. So has anybody heard of the photographer Lee Friedlander? Okay. Everybody knows Lee Friedlander within the photography community. And when Lee does a book, for the most, he's printing 3,000 copies. If the publisher sells all 3,000 copies, it is just not going to break even. So even like one of the most well-known fine art photographers, you're not going to break even on a book project because Lee Friedlander is not a huge subject to most of the world. Birds is a huge project.
Full moon.
So just kind of keep that in mind. Like when you're thinking about, I'm a photographer, I can definitely sell 10,000 copies on my name alone.
Think of Lee Friedlander.
Think of me shaking my head. No, I'm just kidding.
And then just a short bit on the difference between agents and packagers. I get asked this a lot. Agents typically You hire because they can make the phone calls and their calls will be taken and they can get you right to the right places. They'll broker the deal for you. You all shake hands. They pass you off to your publisher and they're typically done. Some agents will come back on if there's a second edition or other languages. Packagers, on the other hand, often will make those connections, get you to the publisher, and stay with your project all the way through publication to the delivery of shrink wrap books.
Exactly.
So they'll stay typically all the way through the process.
Packagers often actually come, and agents come out of, are often publishing professionals who have either retired or have started their own packaging or agenting business, and they have a lot of connections within the community. So that's sort of a reason that it's a benefit that they bring.
And my sense of the packagers that have come from the publishing industry, they love making books. And you forget that when you're a publisher, you're not always hands-on making books. But if you're packaging, you're involved in the full creative process.
Exactly. So another big question that you can ask yourself is whether to search out a publisher, to go through all of that, or whether it's best to just self-publish. And the questions to ask yourself around this, Swanee's really good at kind of teasing this out with people. Do you know your audience? Have you created a brand of yourself as a brand, just in the sense of there's a small audience that knows me, there's, you know, I have this gallery or I've been in this show. Again, this idea of the audience.
Right. It's crucial. That will help you know how many people there are. If you can reach them, then you can, again, quantify how many you might be able to actually reach. This means if you haven't started your mailing list, it's time to start building that list. Many subject-driven books can find an audience among a trade association or a membership group or a museum of that topic. So think broadly when you think about who your audience is. And then we also ask you to think about the value, as you raised. Do you have a collecting audience for your work? And if so, might they in fact be interested in doing a limited edition that would have an audience that would buy that? If you haven't established a value for your work, it's unlikely that you would be encouraged to invest in a limited edition because, again, there's no buyers for that yet. If there are, it can change the publishing landscape for you.
I don't know. There are a lot of similarities between what's happened with publishing and what's happened to the music publishing industry. There's a lot of conversation around small audiences. A lot of people are, you know, this idea of self-publishing is there are record, you know, the record companies have dissolved into lots of little little labels, and it's the same question about how do you reach a small audience? How do you sustain a program that is not under the auspices of a larger company?
So the other thing that you might think about when you're trying to decide, should I do this myself or should I go with the publisher, is are you the kind of personality that can manage a project? Because so often we see people saying, I'm going to self-publish, and we say, that's great, we know just the editor you should hire. Oh, no, I don't need an editor. I can be my own editor. Or they'll say, I can design it. I know InDesign, so I can design my book. Well, the best self-published books really have the input of a couple of people, ideally professionals in those camps. So if you're not the kind of personality that can manage a team, again, you may be the person that really wants to be with a publishing house that can handle some of those things for you. That may be part of your important, important decisions.
And this idea of with publishing versus self-publishing, we really wanted to, again, the idea behind laying out how a publishing company works is that you can, once you understand that, you can build a team of people that will do this around a project that you may know exactly how to reach the audience that you want to with your project, and it may just require a few key people to get there. So when it comes to self-publishing, we're just to point out a few resources. We talked to the CEO of Blurb. As part of the book, we did a case study with Mishka Henner. There's so much energy around self-publishing now, and not just necessarily small-run print-on-demand projects, but really larger projects that can get out into the world through self-publishing rather than through publishing houses. To point out, Blurb has introduced a lot of new, they've introduced offset printing, they've introduced direct-to-Amazon book selling. There's a lot of, And they're just one of a number of companies that are really trying to pull together all of these resources onto one platform.
And in the short few days since we turned in this PowerPoint to Arezou, Blurb made the announcement that they've acquired MagCloud, which is a huge change for many of you that use MagCloud. So they see the value in all of you self-publishing, and they want to be the ones to help you do that.
So just to talk a little bit about the resources in the book, and we this is like my favorite part because it's just books about books. There are so many books about books that are out there. This is a little stack of what we've been witnessing since about 1999, 2000. There have been all of these volumes come out about histories of the photo book, and this was a stack from a few years ago. You see the photo book, A History, Volume 1 and 2, the two thick black spines in the middle. There's now a Volume 3 that's just come out. There's the History of the Dutch Photo Book, History of Japanese Photo Books, the Latin American Photo Book. I mean, if you want to own a library, just buy one of these, and you've got all of these. It's total book porn. You can lay in your bed with hundreds of books.
No storage units, right?
Exactly. Newspapers on books. There is a magazine devoted to the photography book that Aperture publishes now. It's absolutely fantastic. It's in a newspaper format. It's called the Photo Book Review. If you're not subscribing to Aperture, I don't know what you're doing. It's like the best magazine out there right now, and this comes as a supplement.
It's bundled in your subscribe piece.
The History Volume 1 and 2 and 3, this phenomenon started about, well, Martin Parr and Jerry Badger published the first one in 2004, and this is kind of the format that all of these books take. There's an illustration of the cover of the book itself with some interior page spreads. These amazing write-ups. Jerry Badger is a fantastic historian, and his writing about each book and each project is totally graduate-level education. I mean, just sitting and reading through these is so educational.
Plus, it's so interesting to look at the history of graphic design in conjunction with photo books, too. These are the Cartier-Bresson covers that Henri Matisse did. So it's fascinating to look through time at that as well.
This idea of getting your head into the space of the language of what is a book and what is a publishing company and all of those things is key. Mm-hmm. The resource section, we have, these are just a few snapshots of different time. We have a timeline around design and production.
And that one ranges from basically a 12-month calendar from the time you begin publishing. The design and production, then we go into the marketing calendar, which the marketing calendar goes way before you start publication, when I hope you're acquiring things like the domain name for your project. And it goes many years after publication, because I hope your traveling exhibition is supporting sales for years and years and years to come.
Swanee wants you to work all the time. There's a worksheet on preparing for your book that you can read through and fill out. There's submission requirements, marketing checklist.
This is a great new piece that we have in the book.
This is from a publisher.
A gentleman named Greg Albers has a small press called Whole Art Books, H-O-L, and he's just taken a new position as digital publishing director for the Getty Museum. And so he's done a comparative chart for you to understand all the different e and digital publishing platforms with constraints, prices, timelines required, all of that. He's also interviewed in the book in a really interesting section. And then we have Christine and Jason are here.
Yeah, we reached out to Conveyor Arts, which is a local printing company and author and publisher services here in.
Wave your hands, you guys.
Yay!
This is a stack of some of the books that they've worked on. There's a great Q&A with them.
And they're championing the custom print-on-demand, having their own HP Indigo Press and working one-on-one with all of you. It's what I'm most excited about personally in self-publishing today. I'm going to take the clicker and whip through this. How's our time, Darius?
We're good.
It's what time now?
6:47.
Okay, perfect. So I want to show you some of my favorite things in my travels. This is a photographer named McNair Evans, and this was his leave behind at PhotoFest. It's color photocopy. all of you can do this. It brings me right back to meeting him and knowing the work. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. Functions very, very well. So you can work with a photocopy machine. You can do something like Ken Rosenthal did with Kickstarter. He really, the science of Kickstarter was something he studied and really went after it in a very calculated way. And as you can see, he more than doubled his ask. It was amazing, and that got him on press. This was an exhibition catalog. He had a deadline that he had to meet, and he felt like, I better be in charge of this so that I'm sure that there's books on the table at the gallery.
Does anybody here not know what Kickstarter is? Has anybody here used Kickstarter on a project?
A couple people?
Yeah, great.
So having an exhibition catalog published gave him tremendous experience to now feel like when he tackles a monograph, he's much better prepared. The money that he gained from the doubling his ask, he used for a limited edition and chose to make 5 different covers for that, and he's had collectors buy all 5. Jace Graff did the binding on this. So it was a fantastic experience for him. And what we're really talking about is, of course, going to the future. I love this cover, The New Yorker, when Steve Jobs passed away at the pearly gates. And Ken Schless is here as well, who's taken his long out-of-print Invisible City to an e-book. And Ken, can we say that it may be in a print form again?
It's definitely going to be a print form.
Yay! Definitely going to be. Oh, Steidl's releasing it in the fall, so it's coming back in print as well.
This was a project that was a book that it was a small print run initially that came out and sold out really quickly. And it was one of those things where if you knew about it, great, but if you didn't, it was no longer available. Which is kind of a lot of photographers get, you know, are up against that issue of the book goes out of print and then how do people find it? You can't find it, et cetera, et cetera. And Ken put together essentially an e-book that was about the project and included more than just what was in the first edition of the book, which had been almost 25 years before. And now it's going to come back out in a print edition. So the e-book was almost like a bridge between the two print editions.
Thank you, Ken, for your contributions to the book. We're excited for you. But this is literally the transition we're in as publishers and as book owners, going from print to e. No matter what, you want to be the partner again to your marketing partner. And this is Lisa Robinson with her Snowbound book when the catalog first came out in advance. This is Joan Brookbank and the author Traer Scott, who has a book coming out with Princeton Architectural Press soon. These pictures are taken at Book Expo America, where, as Traer would say, she just signed books all weekend long for the members of the industry. It's a wholesale show, but a really important thing that happens. So I love to share with you some of the events that have been going on around the country that relate to books and self-publishing in particular. This is the Cleveland Museum of Art, and Barbara Tannenbaum had a juried exhibition called DIY, and it had to be mechanically produced. They weren't looking for artist books that were hand-printed, hand-bound, and paired it with an exhibition of Stephen Shore's work, and there's a small catalog as well that comes out of this, but it was a great experience for the museum goers to be able to sit down and look at books. Another thing that we love and support is called the Indie Photo Book Library. I hope you've all been to the website for the Indie Photo Book Library. Larissa LeClaire takes this on the road. This happens to be at a Flash Forward conference. You can see the lectures going on in the back, but they've had a sort of makeshift library and book showroom that goes up. Nothing's for sale. These are all donated volumes. If you're making books, you want your work to go into this library. Darius judged a competition they did in San Francisco, and they've produced a book with Blurb, actually. You can go in and buy the pics. One of the things I want you to do with indiephotobooklibrary.org is, again, learn the language of publishing, because all the entries that Larissa does is a common language that we use to describe the elements, and it will help you to learn that. Again, the photo book review is something that we love that we hope you'll be subscribing to. It may be something, in fact, that'll be a place that you'll want to put ads in as a marketing venue for you. And then Denise, who's here, organized this workshop with Leslie. I hope you'll do it again, Denise. I heard it was fantastic. So I don't know if you'll want to leak that to all of our audience right now or not, but Those of you that were there, I know you appreciated it very much. And then this is something I saw that's coming up, which I also love, that AFTRA's doing, the Teen Summer Photo Book Camp. How great is that? Really great. So the Look 3, I don't know how many of you have been to Look 3, but last year they had an extraordinary exhibition of books that Denise put together, of books in progress, going back through the archives at Aperture and being able to show books throughout the process of their production. And I just love exhibitions like this. We learn so much about bookmaking when we have a chance to see these things. So you'll want to take in every exhibition you can about things like that. How many of you go to the New York Art Book Fair? Well, I hope that all of you will go. It's free. It happens at PS1. Amazing experience. Great, again, for thinking about how we use ink on paper. And there's a full range of traditional publishers to art bookmakers. They've expanded into the grounds there. This is Hannah from Trolley holding her catalog that was new of the day. They've now started the LA Art Book Fair, also free, also printed matter. We want to thank very much for this. It's a very different experience. I went for the first time this year, and as you can see, it's much more open. The real estate is totally different at the Geffen in downtown LA. And just a fantastic experience. They sold out their booth space on the second year. Some of the galleries had little smaller, higher-end things. An interesting thing at all of these fairs is seeing some of the books that we love become historic items and going into the higher-priced cases. I loved how this one has a note down front, upcoming solo exhibition at the Hammer Museum, knowing that to their audience it's important to them that adds value to this book, that it's going to be part of an exhibition. And loads of publishers that are small presses, that it's so nice to meet the people as well. This is TBW from Oakland, California, and J&L's booth as well. We looked at their stack of their brand, and I think you can tell that that personality of the brand still comes through. Ice Plant, so many different fantastic ways to think about ink on paper, about how you bring your photographs to print. This is a PhotoEyes booth with their full staff just about on that picture. This is a recent publication that came out of England. It's a limited edition of Bruce Gilden's work, and the limited has this cloth case that the book slips in. Again, seeing lots of things that we hadn't thought about before. This is Alex Soth's collaborative piece that he's been doing. And I have to tell you that on the wall just adjacent to this was a slipcase that they now publish for you to keep these different dispatches in as a secondary product with an original print tipped on the front. So recognizing that they're collecting all the different series now and creating a volume for you to collect them more easily in. DAP had a booth at this. I always find it interesting when the distributors have booths. You learn a lot about the publishing houses, again, by seeing the distributors. So I come away from fairs like this with all kinds of ideas about how you all might be making your books. And I know that it will really spark your curiosity if you can at least get to the New York Art Book Fair in September. And, of course, we have a huge community of people, growing fans in photography. We've reached out both in Facebook and in other ways, Twitter and such, for some of our own research. And through that, you become aware more so of how big the audience is for photo books. I think anyone will tell you that a small-run press book, if you have a very strong group of friends and colleagues in the field, your books will be sold out in no time. So the Photo Book Club has this map that's always interesting to look at, that's growing. Every time I look at it, there's new places in the world that they have their chapters. And Martin Parr happened to participate in this thing in Spain. It's really everywhere. I saw our book in two bookstores, in fact, in Spain. I was so surprised. Our book's out in French language and Chinese at the moment. It's exciting. So lots of wonderful blogs. I hope you all know about the photo book on WordPress.com, a great review of upcoming books, and then competitions. There's loads and loads of competitions. As I mentioned earlier, that's some of the best ways for people to see your work, is if you look at that list of judges, just like you do in a photography competition, who do you want to put your work in front of, and are they participating in those judges. The number of blogs now where people like Alex Soth and Martin Parr are creating their list of their favorite books gives you an idea of which books to look for as well, and try and see why they love those. This was something that Blurb did recently in San Francisco on unbinding the book. So there's all kinds of dialogues going on. And then, as I mentioned earlier, Conveyor Arts is a contributor to this issue, and I had a little pilgrimage over there a couple of weeks ago. I'd never been to Mana. How many of you have been to Mana Contemporary over in Jersey City? You've got to make a trip over. It's just fantastic. So many artists, and Richard Meyer has his model museum there. There's dance companies, loads of things happening. This is what the main hallway looks like. And then this was up in the offices of Conveyor, Christina on the right, and Henry Wilhelm and his wife Carol, and that's the artist Olivia Parker, looking at books, looking at binding, looking at papers, the different facilities and letterpress collection of things that they can do. The HP Indigo Press that they own is off-site. It's quite a sizable thing. This was their booth at the New York Art Book Fair, and then Christina holding the issue of our book with their interview, which we appreciate. Then I have to say, when we went to Mana on the very first floor, we happened to walk past this. Henry Wilhelm, of course, is taking pictures of everything. You'll see him in any picture I have of Henry. He's making photographs, documenting the changes of how we use paper, ink on paper. So the folks from this bookstore, Book Dummy Press, have opened in the main lobby area of Mana. And it was one of the most impressive small bookstores I've been in a long, long time. So I know you're going to be excited to be there. There's that Cartier-Bresson we just were looking at as well. And you guys raise your hands here. You're both here tonight too, Victor and Zakura. Wonderful. So Radius is always wonderful to visit as well. I love it when people that are making books are also interested in your work and how it fits on the wall. There's always exhibitions when you go to Radius Books. And I think it's a nice compliment for all of you that are bookmakers to see your work in print form as well. So when we go to the marketing of your book, one of my favorite examples is Wyatt Gallery, who's also here tonight. And Wyatt was published by Umbridge Books, but was a marketing machine for the work that he shot in Haiti. And this was an email that I got that had a video, and it was the first time I'd ever gotten a personal note in an email. And I think it was 2010, talking about the project and how to support it. And then the website at the same time that I got the email had the link in it as well. And then when the project was finished, the website went up. The video journals were there as well. And, of course, you can buy it on the website, the free signed book, the free poster, all the different options. It was 100% donation to the cause. Anytime there was an event, we all knew about it right away, drove people to us. When you ordered it, this is what it came to, because you were the shipping department too, right, Wyatt? Yep. And inside, so I got the book and I got the poster. This is what I bought, and out it comes. A note from Wyatt inside, the signed poster. So we all knew that that project was happening, and I think supported it in a big way. So he did an awesome job on all of that.
Swanee, you must have like 500 terabytes of photos of events.
I do.
Swanee is going to encourage you all to document every step
every
of the way.
Absolutely.
So that she can include it in her lectures.
Well, yeah, it was interesting to be able to show.
Totally,
I love being able to show that for Wyatt. So some of the deadlines coming up for all of you that are in the process of making your books. And this was a recent search, but this grows all the time. It's fantastic. I hope all of you know about the Honickman First Book Prize. It happens every other year out of Duke University. It's the application period's coming up, so you want to enter that. The Photo Book Dummy competition. This is, I think, the 10th year of that. Aperture, of course, has their overall submissions, and then their separate submissions for the Perry Photo Photo Book Awards. So that's an important thing coming up. Photo Lucida is a portfolio review in Portland, Oregon, and they have a competition called Critical Mass, and some of you have entered that. I hope there's 200 judges of it. The winners of that receive a book. That's the top prize, is a photo book as well. So it's another way for you to have that happen. And then The European Photo Book Prize is a consortium of publishers in Europe. It's organized by Dowie Lewis primarily, and it's been living on his website for years, but they've just opened their own website as well, European Book Award. So that competition typically has a call for work in the winter. It's passed for this year, but definitely one that you want to keep an eye on, no question. And then our book, of course, has a website, because as I said, you all have to get the domain name for your project. So we will you to this.
Yeah, we put up anytime there's events or just
competition
news in the
deadlines.
Industry, we put information there. So you can join the mailing list or just visit the website. Yeah.
We try to keep it really current with things that are opportunities for all of you related to photo books.
Yeah.
So I think we have time, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we have a few minutes. If there's any questions, we're more than happy to...
Actually, we're audio recording the event, and raise your hand, I'll bring the microphone to you. We want to make sure all the questions are also recorded.
Who's got a question for us? Yes.
I see a hand all the way in the back. Hold on 1 second.
Thank you. Hi, you talked a little bit about making a limited edition. I don't know if you were just talking about books, but also because you're associated with the gallery, I'd like to talk a little bit about prints. So if you have certain images that you think could be good for a limited edition, let's say somewhere between 4 and 20 images, you talked about knowing that it's ready for a limited edition. How would you know that? How would you figure that out?
You can, the broader question for us as to where a limited edition fits into the whole idea of a book is often, it's about the fundraising question. So just to pull back for a second, anything you know about the publishing industry that you've read in the media that has to do with textbooks rather than illustrated books, none of that information applies to illustrated books and photography books. So the idea, nearly every illustrated book that is not subject-driven, that does not have a huge audience, you're going to need to fundraise. Somebody is going to need to fundraise. There's going to need to be money that helps support the project, because the book will not break even.
Particularly if you want like a 12 by 12 book.
Listening for all the bubbles.
All of those things cost a lot more money. The more larger scale, if you want letterpress on the cover, all those little treatments can cost a lot of money.
So back to Lee Friedlander. 3,000 copies of a really beautifully produced art book will not break even. So you've just got to sort of face that reality. And I think of it as the arts have simply always required patronage. So it used to be the church and the crown that paid for the arts and supported artists. It's now us. It's now a democracy. The churches and the crowns are no longer paying for the arts as they did, and so we all get to pay for it. So Kickstarter, there's lots of photographers who have put books up on Kickstarter, and every single one of us that have, pledged $40 or $50 to a book project have helped publish books, and that's nothing to sneeze at. Like that's a reality for art book publishing when it comes to sort of small run books. A limited edition is another way to produce something that is slightly of more value and where there's more of a profit margin. So if you can sell 20 copies of a print with a book at $1,000 a pop, and you as the artist may be donating those prints, you've just raised $20,000. So that can help offset some of the hard production costs.
And so those prints then are considered your contribution to the book. So, for example, in our book, one of the case studies is an artist called Lisa Robinson, and her project is called Snowbound. And what she chose to do, she just, when the book was printed by Kara, she had no idea what she wanted to do with the limited edition, but she knew she wanted to have one at some point. So she ordered an extra, I think, 55 or 56 copies of the unbound, as we call them, folded and gathered pages that she shipped to a bookmaker to just sit until she knew what she wanted to do. When she made her limited edition, which she talks about in her case study, she made a completely different cover than the trade edition had. It looks totally different. The fabric she chose for the new cover of the book matches the fabric on the case that the book and the print rest in. So people that are book collectors realize that the only way that you get that unique, completely different book is if you buy the limited edition as well. So it was a win-win for the print collectors and the book collectors for her. So it's something to think about. If you think you'll want to do a limited edition, you may want to have extra pages run at the time of printing.
All of which is to say that, the idea of the limited edition is something that can help help offset some of the costs. It's a means to, it's often an object that is something that you can approach collectors with. There are lots of ways to get creative with fundraising.
Mm-hmm. There's special sales in advance. If there's a group that you know would be interested in your subject and you can bring pre-sales to your publisher, they'll be very happy. That, again, is a contribution that you would make.
So I don't know if that helps.
That help?
I'm sorry, maybe I didn't phrase my question correctly. I understood when I heard the name Frankel. I'm not all that familiar, but when I think of Frankel, I think of the gallery in San Francisco. Is that who you're associated with?
The one, yes.
Yeah. So my question was more about prints as opposed to books, because I'm a photographer.
Sure.
And I have certain images, I have thousands of images, but I have about between 4 and 20 that I think would be very good for limited editions. I think they have a big audience.
As prints only, not talking books at all.
Yeah, exactly. But
That's a whole other conversation about preparing one's work for a gallery setting, which we're not going to get into tonight.
Okay.
But maybe that's another book we should write.
There you go. What do you think?
And actually, though, I think you brought up another very interesting point, because as photographers, what's amazing today is the variety of materials and papers, especially in color. And when you think of prints, that was actually a question I was going to ask. Could you have a limited edition on different types of papers? But also, you brought it up in books, and how to know if you like a certain paper. Let's say you like Canson or something like that, or whatever it is, Epson, and you want to do different books with different papers. Who could really accommodate that? It sounds like these type of people with Indigo, maybe they could do that.
Right, custom print on demand.
Yeah, questions about, one of those things, when you all go home tonight and you pull off some books off the shelves and really flip through them and try to identify the different papers, you're going to find that some are shiny, some are matte, which is coated versus uncoated. You've got different weights to paper. You've got the paper industry. There are paper manufacturers, just like car manufacturers. Every year, there's a whole new set of models of cars. Did the cars last year stop working? No, they just need to make new models so that they can now sell it. It's the same with paper manufacturers. Every year, there's a whole new set of papers that they are then selling to the printers. Improvements, some are more acid-free, some are more this, that, and the other thing. So the publishing industry is constantly, and therefore us, we're constantly learning about new papers, new ways of printing, new inks. So all of that, when it comes to book publishing, is something to consider. Those are all different papers. Those are papers that you won't deal with off the shelf that you're going to run through your Epson printer at home. It's a whole different category. So this is where, again, making sure that when you are working on a book with a designer or with if you're self-publishing particularly, you want somebody who understands that side of the printing industry. That has to do with production that most of us in this room have nothing to do with. It's a completely different set of parameters, machines, everything. But so then small companies like Conveyor Arts, who is essentially like your bridge and your guide into that world, they are able to work with you and sit and talk about different types of papers, look at different types of printing options, particularly if you want to do something that's a very small run project. And there's lots of options. So you can go to them and say, I really like this type of paper in this book. Is that a possibility? Can I use that? Do you have something like that? Those are the things that you're going to want to do.
And that's the notebook to start filling so that you have all those things and can go to somebody someday and say, this is the paper, this is the font, this is all of it.
Exactly. Oh, yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for including me in your
Our
talk.
Pleasure, Wyatt.
This is how we all met originally, by the way. My question basically is, what is the point or what are the benefits of self-publishing?
control.
And I'd like to ask this in two ways. One, to the gallery director, and two, to the career advisor and marketing, branding guru. Because in my experience so far, and I'm hoping this will be wrong, is that the self-published book does not earn much respect for a photographer's career, but maybe is a way to make some money, or I don't know.
You want to go first?
Sure, yeah. No, great question.
Thank you, Wyatt.
In the history of publishing, there's this dirty term called vanity press. It's this idea that as an artist, you're not able to find any publisher. No publishing house has picked you up and said, oh, you're worthwhile to publish. And so you just go ahead and do it yourself somehow. And so in other words, all of the gatekeepers have kept you out. And now you're just going to do it yourself. So there's that stigma still that stands around self-publishing. That applies, I think, to a certain type of project, but also to a different era in a way. Not to say that there isn't some vanity publishing happening still, but the tools and the ways that the publishing industry has fractured, and particularly the way in many ways, the democratization of how we can get at audiences has completely changed that. Even companies like Amazon have completely changed the way you can get direct access to audiences, customers, the press, all of that. So just to kind of like acknowledge that there has been a stigma, and that it's a different kind of scenario now. The question around self-publishing and teaming up with a publisher, and there's a lot of things to weigh in that equation, is about what can their brand do for me that I can't do for myself. And when you get into the numbers side of it, like if you really are trying to publish 500 to 1,000 copies, you can probably get to those 1,000 people on your own. You may not need a publisher. But need is a different thing than an association. So an association with a publishing house like a Nasraeli Press. Again, it's all about sort of the associations that you're bringing to the book, that your content has, that the publisher has. All of those things add up to, they're all points of mass that generate together a larger amount of mass that will then attract more attention. So there's a lot of things to tease out in that. Swanee, what are...
And for me, I think that the small self-published book, not the self-published monograph, but the small self-published book that marks a body of work or marks an event like an exhibition are perfectly well-suited and well-received when they're self-published. You get all the control. You control the budget. You control the materials. You control everything about it. And those sorts of things, I think, are great tools to introduce you to a curator, to a gallery, to a collector, to a festival if it's an event, to any way that your prints and your other books can be seen. To your point, the company you keep is crucial. So if you're in charge of it, you don't have the challenge of having been included in a press that perhaps the next season was a bomb, and people only think about the books that didn't do so well. But if you show your craft, if you show your taste, if you show your personality to a small extent in the way that you embark on that self-publishing venture, and your mailing list is in order, I think it can be a fantastic tool. I'm seeing a lot of very small run, one signature pieces, folios of work. You go to the book fairs and you see many, many people who by Sunday, they're all sold out of those small pieces. It's often more a case of saving enough for yourself for your marketing purposes and then offering some for sale to help to fund that. I see that model working a lot. But remember to keep things so they do become the larger tool to move your career forward, because that's ultimately the goal.
And different projects may be more appropriate for different publishers. I mean, there are some projects that you're working on that may have a more commercial feel, or may have the potential for a larger audience. And there may be another project where it's like you want the association of a small art house publisher. You're not looking to sell 10, 20,000 copies. You may really just want to do something small that is going to catch the eye of a gallery. And again, galleries, there's so many different types of galleries as well.
Two more things, if I may, on why it's your Caribbean project. I don't want that to be a small book, because I think it's going to have a huge audience. So I don't want you to settle for something that's so small that it trips up the possibility of having a bigger book. And then on that point, just to say that some of the self-published books that I've seen, really, if I were a publisher, I'd have a hard time thinking I could then sell this book again. So you don't want to make that mistake of releasing something yourself that's such a sort of full publishing experience that you won't have the chance of having them then publish it themselves. So it doesn't take the place of the bigger book, if there is that potential.
That help? Any other, maybe one more question?
Hi. I think you answered my question in the last question that was asked, but to make it very simple, how small is too small of a run?
Too small for you or too small for the effort?
I would say for me, because I was able to fundraise successfully, and I can print about 200 copies, but I'm wondering if that is too small.
Because, depends on what your goal is.
Right, and my goal is mainly to reach a very particular audience, and then as promotional. But I do not anticipate it being, it could potentially be a huge success, but that was not the goal to start.
I wouldn't, if I were a publisher, I wouldn't think 200 copies would be a hindrance for having it be a bigger book at another time. But if you think you can reach your 200 people, then you're golden. Then you know that the next question is, what's their price point?
It's the could be, you know, question, though.
Not just who's your audience, but what's their price point? Because oftentimes someone will say, well, I'm going to do just 200 of them. I know the people. But, oh, by the way, it's a $125 book. Are those 200 people actually going to pay $200 or $125 for a book? Don't get yourself into trouble in that way as well.
Here's the other thing, though. If you're hung up on something, you're trying to figure out what should I do, and if it involves looking in a crystal ball, you're asking the wrong question, because nobody knows.
If there's nothing to support.
Could this
answers.
Reach? Oh my God! It might reach 10,000 people, and then I've only printed 200. Who knows? The publishers don't know. Publishers are constantly making a double blind guess. How many people are going to buy this thing, and what are they going to pay for it? It's complete, just roll the dice. You may print 1,000 copies, and then it sells out in a month. Great, go back and print another 1,000 copies. You don't want to make the wrong, publishers have gone out of business gambling the other direction. You print 50,000 copies, and 1,000 sold. Or you sold 50,000 copies, and you reprint, that's the more standard bad gamble. You print 20,000 copies, they sell out, boom. You're like, oh my God, this event is still happening. Everybody loves this book. Let's print 100,000 copies. Printers want to get paid for the work they do. They don't care about what you're gambling. So they're like, where's the money? We'll print your book, sure. Where's the money? So you borrow the money, you make it, and then you sell another 1,000 copies, and you've got 99,000 sitting in a warehouse. And then the money man comes to collect, and you're out of business. I mean, that literally happens. So I've known photographers who have mortgaged their homes to print books, and then it's like, why did you print 10,000 of that?
Yeah.
Don't do that. Make 200 copies, and if they sell out, you're a wild success.
That's right. That's
print
right.
200 more.
Especially if you can get them to the 200 people that you're trying to introduce to your work. I think if you remember the subject, the potential for the subject to have its own audience, and you think about all the potential that social media today can bring to you, if there's blogs on your topic and you can be part of a forum of people that are already talking about your topic, I think that's a safer bet that you're going to have a big audience. But just to sort of level the playing field here, I want to ask a publishing person in the audience, Peter, can you tell us how many of the 50 Shades of Grey are in print? roughly?
I'm not sure that I know, but I think it's in the neighborhood of 25 million.
25 million copies. So let's think about that subject, right? There's a lot of people interested in that subject. So, and we all know what that is. So just that's the other side of the spectrum. And you, chances are you'll all fall somewhere in between, but not to underestimate the potential.
To Darius's point, though, we printed those in relatively small chunks at a time until this thing happens, because, as Darius was saying, you really don't know until you're actually doing it what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And printing long is far worse, to your point about the 200 copies, printing long is far worse than printing short.
Yeah.
You can always go back and reprint.
Right. The book is made. You can make more of them anytime. Thank you, Peter.
I'll ask the last question. What was the most recent photography book that you purchased for your own library, and why?
Oh, the hand went right up.
No, both of you.
I was in Los Angeles for Perifoto Los Angeles, this photography fair that happens. And I bought a book, back to this limited edition thing, I bought a book that was one of 9 copies. And it came with a print, and it was $60. And I was like, I'm buying it. I was the first one. And everybody was like, what was that you just bought? And I told them, and it like sold. It just sold out. But there were only 9 copies. I'm not telling you. It was Mike Slack's new book.
Oh, cool.
And it was just a fun little thing. It was just this fun little thing that he did with a little inkjet print. It was like 6 inches square. But that's not going to make him any money. You know, and it's not going to get to more. I mean, maybe
hey,
it gets to more than 9
people.
You're talking
about it at the New York Public Library.
So, anyway, the point is that there's this whole range of things that can be successful. And again, it feels far better to have sold something out, even if there's 9 copies, than to have printed 900 and only sold 500. You know, it's totally all relative. So it's just like set yourself up for success rather than overextending by trying to look in a crystal ball, because it's not going to work.
Okay, so my story is, I was at the LA Art Book Fair, and I asked a group of photographers that we know, Eileen Smithson and a bunch of people, we're all saying, what's the coolest thing you've seen? What have you bought? What have you got? And she showed me this thing, and we all left and went to buy them.
Right.
And it was a publisher from Brooklyn, Powwow Press. Did you guys come? I sent you an email. Maybe they're not here. So they have all these different printing machines in their basement, and they make all the books themselves. And what it was a little, I don't know how big that envelope is. You've seen it, Alea. It's got 5 little books in it, and they all open up like a little origami. Jen Davis was one. Each one was a different artist's work, and when you open it all the way up, the back was one full print, one full image. And it was $20 for all 5 of the little books. And they were a limited edition set, and they sold out the ones that they launched at the New York Art Book Fair, and they sold the ones they brought to LA, and they do it for, that was just one of the things they had for sale, but I've shared it with photographers on almost a daily basis. It's a wonderful, wonderful, small, precious thing that I love. $20.
Well, maybe the next volume you'll do will be on your own personal libraries.
Oh, that's a good one.
Well, thank you so much for this informative and inspiring discussion. The audience loves you, clearly. And it's now time to move on to book signing.
Thank you so much, everyone.